And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's November 29th, 333rd day of the year. 32 days remain till the year's over with. On 561, in the year 561, following the death of King Clothar I at Compiègne, his four sons, Charbot I, Guntram, Sigbert I, and Siparic, divide the Frankish kingdom. In the year 618, the Tang dynasty scores a victory over their rival of Quansuyon. 903, the Abbasid army under Muhammad ibn Sulayman al-Kab defeat the Qamashians at the Battle of Hama. 1394, the Korean king Yi Song-gi, founder of the Joseon dynasty, moves the capital from Kaesong to Hanyang. Today, that town is known as Seoul. 1549, the papal conclave of 1549 begins. In 1612, the Battle of Swali takes place, which loosens the Portuguese Empire's hold on India. 1729, the Natchez Indians massacre 138 Frenchmen, 36 French women, 56 children at Fort Rosale, near the site of modern-day Natchez, Mississippi. 1732, the magnitude 6.6 Irpinia earthquake causes 1,940 deaths in the former kingdom of Naples in southern Italy. 1776, the American Revolutionary War. Battle of Fort Cumberland, Nova Scotia, comes to an end with the arrival of British reinforcements. 1777, San Jose, California is founded as Pueblo de San Jose de Guadalupe by Jose Joaquin Moraga. It's the first civilian settlement, or Pueblo, in Alta California. 1781, the crew of the British slave ship Zong murders 133 Africans by dumping them in the sea to claim the insurance. 1783, a 5.3 magnitude earthquake strikes New Jersey. 1807, transfer of the Portuguese court to Brazil. John VI of Portugal flees Lisbon from advancing Neapolitan forces during the Peninsula War. Transfers the Portuguese court to Brazil. 1830, November Uprising, an armed rebellion against Russia's rule in Poland begins. 1847, the Sonderbund is defeated by the joint forces of other Swiss cantons under General Guillaume-Henri Dufour. Also in 1847, the Whitman Massacre. Missionaries Dr. Marcus Whitman, his wife Narcissa, and 15 others are killed by Cayuse and Umatilla Indians, which caused the Cayuse War. 1850, the treaty, the Punction of Olmutz, is signed in Olmuck, Prussia. Prussia capitulates to Austria, which takes over the leadership of the German Confederation. 1863, American Civil War. Battle of Fort Sanders. Union forces under Ambrose Burnside successfully defend Knoxville, Tennessee from Confederate forces under Longstreet. That's one of the few major victories Burnside ever achieved. 1864, American Indian Wars. Sand Creek Massacre. Colorado volunteers led by Colonel John Chivington massacre at least 150 Cheyenne and Arapaho non-combatants inside Colorado Territory. 1864, American Civil War, Battle of Spring Hill. Confederate Army of Tennessee misses an opportunity to crush the Army of the Ohio. 1872, American Indian Wars, the Modoc War begins with the Battle of Lost River. 1877, Thomas Edison demonstrates his phonograph for the first time. On this day in 1890, the Meiji Constitution goes into effect in Japan and the first Diet convenes. 1899, FC Barcelona is founded by Catalans, Spanish, and Englishmen. Later develops into one of Spanish football's most iconic and strongest teams. 1902, the Pittsburgh Stars defeated the Philadelphia Athletics 11-0 to win the first championship associated with an American National Professional Football League. 1929, Admiral Byrd leads the first expedition to fly over the South Pole. 1943, World War II, the second session of the Anti-Fascist Council for the National Liberation of Yugoslavia, held to determine the post-war ordering of the country concludes in present-day Bosnia and Herzegovina. 1944, World War II, Albania is liberated by the partisans. 1945, the Federal People's Republic of Yugoslavia is declared. 1947, partition plan. United Nations General Assembly approves a plan for the partition of Palestine. Also in 1947, the First Indochina War, French forces carry out a massacre at My Trac in Vietnam. 1952, Korean War. President-elect Dwight Eisenhower fulfills a campaign promise by traveling to Korea to find out what can be done to end the conflict. 1961, Project Mercury. All right. 1961, Project Mercury. Mercury Atlas V mission. Enos, a chimpanzee, is launched into space. Spacecraft orbits the Earth twice, splashes down off the coast of Puerto Rico. Enos was elected to Congress. 1963, President Lyndon, I'm going to be King Johnson, establishes the Warren Commission to investigate the assassination of President Kennedy. And also on this day in 1963, the Trans-Canada Airlines Flight 831 crashes shortly after takeoff from Montreal-Dorval International Airport. Kills all 118 people on board. 1963. Wanna Hold Your Hand, recorded October 17th, 1963, is released by the Beatles in the UK. 1967, Vietnam War. Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara announces his resignation. I know his daughter-in-law. She's crazy. 1972, Atari releases Pong, the first commercially successful video game. 1986, the Surinamese military attacks the village of Moana during the Suriname Guerrilla War, kills at least 39 civilians, mostly women and children. 1987, North Korea agents plant a bomb on Korea Air Flight 858, kills all 115 on board and the crew. 2007, armed forces of the Philippines lay siege to the peninsula Manila after soldiers led by Senator Antonio Chiarlanes stage a mutiny. And in 2009, Maurice Clemens shoots and kills four police officers inside a coffee shop in Lakewood, Washington. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Abydos of Nacrisi, Blessed Bernardo de Hoyos, Brendan of Burr, Cuthbert, Maine, Francis Fasani, Illuminata, Our Lady of Borang, Rabbi Aldo of Utrecht, Saturnin, International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people and in the UN, Liberation Day in Albania, Republic Day in Yugoslavia, Unity Day in Vanuatu, and William Tubman's birthday in Liberia. No idea who William Tubman is, but he's got a birthday. Let's see what else we got. Do 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 do. 526, a possible date for the Antioch earthquake in present-day Syria, then part of the Byzantine Empire, killed over 200,000 people. 799, Pope Leo III, aided by Charles the Great, returns to Rome. 1349, Jews of Augsburg, Germany are massacred. 1516, the Treaty of Freiburg, the French-Swiss Eternal Peace Treaty. 1561, Laughlin subjects himself on Sigismund's August II of Poland. 1573, Don Luis de Requesney Zuniga succeeds Duke of Alba as Land Guardian of the Netherlands. 1581, Dornick surrenders to the Duke of Parma. 1596, King Philip II devalues the Spanish currency. 1745, Bonnie Prince Charlie, pretender to the British throne. His army moves into Manchester and occupies Carlisle. 1760, the French Commandant Belle Lettre surrenders Detroit to Major Rogers. 1775, Sir James Jay invents invisible ink. If it's invisible, how do we know it's there? 1791, the Chatham Islands, sighted by HMS Chatham, commanded by William Broughton. 1803, Dessalines and Christophe declare St. Dominique independent. St. Dominique is what we know as Haiti. 1812, Napoleon's Grand Army crosses the Berezina River in a retreat from Russia. He was not beaten by the Russian forces. He was beaten by the weather. 1813, Dutch politician Elias Kanneman becomes Minister of France. 1825, the first Italian opera in the U.S., The Barber of Seville, premieres in New York City. 1850, the treaty, punctuated von Moltke, signed in Olmuck, means diplomatic capitulation of Prussia to the Austrian Empire. The Austrian Empire took over leadership of the German Confederation. 1864, the fourth and last day of skirmishes in Waynesboro, Georgia. 1870, compulsory education is proclaimed in England. 1887, the U.S. receives rights to Pearl Harbor on Oahu and Hawaii. 1890, the first Army-Navy game. Navy 24, Army 0. 1893, Xinjiang Institute, today known as Wuhan University, is founded by Zhang Zedong, governor of Hubei and Hunan provinces in the late Qing Dynasty of China. After his memorial to the throne is approved by the Qing government. 1897, the first motorcycle race in Surrey, England took place on this date. 1900, General Horatio Kitchener assumes command of the British forces in South Africa from General Lord Roberts. 1901, East 182nd Street in the Bronx is finally paved and opened up. 1910, the first U.S. patent for inventing the traffic light system is issued to Ernest Serene. 1915, fire destroys most of the buildings on Santa Catalina Island in California. 1916, U.S. declares martial law on the Dominican Republic. 1917, a Supreme Allied War Council meets at Versailles to define war aims. 1918, Serbia annexes Montenegro. 1923, the Dawes Commission, chaired by the American banker Charles Dawes, is set up to look into the German economic situation, make recommendations the U.S. can accept. 1929, on this date, Richard Byrd flew over the South Pole, but he also sent a message, "My calculations indicate we've reached the vicinity of the South Pole." He was wrong, but his niece, who I got to know, said he was a wonderful man. 1933, the first state liquor store is authorized in Pennsylvania. Also in 1933, Japan begins persecution of communists. 1935, physicist Erwin Schrödinger published his famous thought experiment, Schrödinger's Cat, a paradox that illustrates the problem of the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics. And for that, he got the Nobel Prize. In Cat. 1937, Dutch Prince Bernhard injured in an automobile accident in the Netherlands. 1938, Mayor Ault of Rotterdam forbids a soccer match between the Netherlands and Germany. 1939, USSR drops diplomatic relations with Finland. 1941, passenger ship Lorraine sends a radio signal that it sighted the Japanese war fleet. 1942, U.S. Office of Price Administration rationed the coffee. You could only get 10 pounds a year. 1943, the U-86 sinks in the Atlantic Ocean. Also in 43, the U.S. aircraft carrier Hornet is launched. On this day in 1944, Albania is liberated from the Nazis. Also in 44, John Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore performs the first open heart surgery. 44, the first surgery on a human to correct the blue baby syndrome is performed by Alfred Blalock and Vivian Thomas. 1945, the Yugoslavian Socialist Republic is proclaimed. 1946, Minister Dries begins emergency rule of old age facilities. 1948, the puppet show Ku Klux Klan and Ollie, which I used to watch as a mere child, starring Fran Allison, debuted on NBC. 1949, the nationalist regime of China leaves for Taiwan, or Formosa as it was called. 1949, a uranium mine explosion in East Germany kills 3,700 miners. 1951, the first underground atomic explosion at Frenchman Flat, Nevada takes place. 1953, American Airlines begins the first regular commercial New York to L.A. air service. And also in 1953, WSIX-TV, Channel 8 in Nashville, Tennessee, begins broadcasting. That was an ABC channel. 1957, New York Mayor Robert Wagner forms a committee to replace Dodgers and Giants. Got to have a committee. 1961, the Freedom Riders attacked by a white mob at the bus station in Mississippi. 1961, following the failure of the Bay of Pigs invasion, CIA Director Alan Dulles resigns and is replaced by John McCone. 1962, Great Britain and France decide to jointly build the Concorde supersonic airliner. 1966, the SS Daniel Morrell sinks in a storm on Lake Huron. 28 die and one survives. 1967, British troops withdraw from Aden in South Yemen. And that same year, Robert McNamara is elected president of the World Bank. 1971, USSR performs a nuclear test at Eastern Kazakh, Semipalatinsk, and the USSR. 1974, Coco the Clown, real name Nikolai Polyakov, has a special memorial service held at St. Paul's Cathedral in London. 1975, President Gerald I Didn't Trip Ford requires the states to provide free education for the handicapped. 1981, a major Iranian offensive is mounted on the Central Front. In 1987, France performs a nuclear test at Mururoa Atoll. In 1987, a Korean Air Boeing 707 explodes over the Thai-Burmese border. 115 people are killed. 1989, the eighth largest wrestling crowd. UFWU Cosmos, 60,000 at the Tokyo Dome. Let's see. Seoul, Korea, celebrates the 600th anniversary of its founding. 1995, President Bill, I did not have sex with that woman, Clinton, lifts ban on exports of oil from the Alaska North Slope. The ban was imposed after the oil embargo by the Arab oil producers in 1973. 2001, the UN Security Council unanimously approves a resolution extending the oil for food program in Iraq for another 6-month period. 2003, the first of Nelson Mandela's 46,664 AIDS benefit concerts held at Greenpoint Stadium in Cape Town. 2007, a 7.4 magnitude earthquake occurs off the northern coast of Martinique. This affected the eastern Caribbean as far north as Puerto Rico and as far south as Trinidad. And I think we've come to the end of our little history segment here. You know, in our last show, we were talking about the interesting thing that a lot of witnesses to the Kennedy assassination mysteriously died. The odds of that happening were astronomical. Now, on November 28, 1963, Karen Kupchinik, an actress, died of a broken neck. And it was decided that it was murder. Now, the medical examiner in this particular case had a habit of breaking the necks of corpses in his care, which made the initial assumption a little suspect. It was rumored she made a phone call predicting Kennedy's murder. And there were a number of inconsistencies about her death. Now, she was the daughter of a famous Chicagoan, Irv Kupchinik, one of the most popular newspaper columnists in the country, and a celebrity in his own right. She moved to Hollywood to establish an acting career and was relatively successful. She made appearances on a number of popular TV shows and was in a couple of movies. She was found dead in her Hollywood apartment November 30th, 1963. It was medically approximated by the advanced state of decomposition. She'd been dead for 2 or 3 days, and so she died somewhere around the 28th of November. Now, in addition to a large amount of drugs in her body, it was determined her neck had been broken by manual strangulation, so it was presumed she'd been murdered. Now, the main suspect was popular Hollywood actor Andrew Prine, who was her boyfriend. Two had been having some problems, insofar as she wanted a serious relationship with him, and he wasn't really in favor of it. And there were no fingerprints of either Prine or David Lang, a neighbor who was also a suspect, found in her apartment. Two sets of fingerprints were unidentified, and they were found at the crime scene. But the evidence was determined to be insufficient to indict either one. Now, it was initially reported by an author by the name of Penn Jones that Karen had screamed into a telephone to an operator, President Kennedy's going to be killed prior to the assassination. Now, the woman who dialed her local operator about 20 minutes before the shooting in Dallas stated he's going to be shot. Jones said the caller was Kupchinik, attempting to warn somebody about the assassination. And Jones claimed that Kupchinik had been told of the assassination by her father, who was supposedly told by Jack Ruby, who he met in Chicago in the 40s. And Jones speculated that Kupchinik's death was a result of a mob hit to silence her and send a message to her father to remain silent. Now, she is found in her Hollywood apartment in an advanced state of decomposition. She's found in a living room. She was totally nude. She's stomach down on the couch with her face on a pillow. TV set was on. There was no vomit present. There was a lamp, other household items knocked over. A lot of cigarette butts on the floor in the living room. Basically, her apartment had been trashed. Now, the question was she such a bad housekeeper she left the closet doors open, drawers with their contents spilling out, bedclothes pulled off the bed, and there were 100 methamphetamine tablets missing. Now, apparently, she laid out her red bathrobe on a chair prior to taking a shower. She apparently showered, dried off, because there was a once wet towel found on the bathroom floor, which was indicative that she had dried after showering. But she never put on her bathrobe, which certainly would have been the next logical step. And that's the point in which logic kind of breaks down in this particular death. Something happened to break the chain of logic and distracted her between the time she dried herself off and would have put on her bathrobe. Well, the question became, what would that something have been? Couldn't have been a phone call, because had she answered the phone, she'd have just pulled the bathrobe on while talking. If there'd been a knock on the door, she'd have put the robe on. Some speculated she may have been dancing nude and fallen and broken her neck. And, that raises quite a number of interesting questions. There was no vomiting, but as I say, 100 methamphetamine pills were missing, and had she taken those pills, certainly there would have been some vomiting. And it would appear that her killer emptied the pill bottle to stage it as a suicide, perhaps. Now, to most folks, a suicide note, and there was a note found, and an empty pill bottle sufficient to make it a suicide. But if she laid out her robe but didn't put it on, something took place, probably an intruder in the apartment. The only thing that does easily explain these actions is if there was somebody in the apartment. She didn't take the time to put on her bathrobe, and there was a struggle, and her neck was broken. Now, that's the only scenario that adequately accounts for her nude body on the couch in her living room. Now, Kathleen Collins, who's a specialist on this particular case, came up with an interesting scenario. There was a once damp towel on the floor beside the bed. Her hairbrush was on the bed, along with a nightgown. It's believed she went to the door of the living room, somebody came in, killed her, and ransacked the house. The only room that the police found orderly was the bathroom, inside the medicine chest. The killer stole 100 desoxin methamphetamine pills and left the bottle. Turned the TV on for light in case somebody thought she was still awake. And the state of her bedroom was different before than after. Before the murder, she had neatly put her nightgown on the bed and a hairbrush. So why would she ransack the bed while she was trying to go to bed? It appears the house was ransacked after she was killed. Now, there's a way to kill people for grabbing them from behind, getting them in a chokehold, and when the brain is denied oxygen, they die in just a few minutes. And she had flecks of blood on her face and a pillow. Sounds like she had an injury to her throat. So in all likelihood, she was murdered. And her father did know Jack Ruby. And worked closely with Jimmy Colitz, one of the Ruby's oldest and closest Chicago friends. And shortly after Ruby killed Oswald, Irv Kupchinet telephoned mob-connected Red Dwarfman in Palm Springs. And he asked questions about Ruby. Now, Kupchinet wasn't just Chicago's biggest newspaper columnist. He was basically an institution. And he was one of Chicago's most popular people. He knew everybody there was to know. Almost as tough a customer as there was. He grew up in the same tough streets that Jack Ruby did. Ran with the gangs. Got into trouble. Great at football. Made it all the way to the NFL, where he starred for the Philadelphia Eagles until an injury ended his career. And from football, he went to journalism. And he developed a reputation as a tough reporter. Now, his behavior after his daughter was killed and for the rest of his life seems out of a prominent but incurious newspaper gossip and society columnist behaving as if he was under control by intimidation or some other coercive influence. Now, we have the issue of the purported phone call she made. And probably she didn't make it. But her death being a shock crime to dominate media attention and divert focus off Ruby's links to the Chicago mob was certainly a very strong possibility. Then on December 2nd, 1963, we had Grant Stockdale, one of JFK's close friends. He was a Wheeler dealer in the highest echelons of the Democratic Party, former ambassador to Ireland, close friend of Kennedy. And he fell or was pushed from his office window on the 13th floor of the DuPont building in Midtown Miami. Now, officially, this was a suicide. In actual circumstances, his behavior was normal, came into his office for work on Monday morning, very pleasant, conversed amiably, didn't seem suicidal. Police placed the time of his death at 10:17. The only other person in the victim's office at that moment would have been his killer, who, due to circumstances we'll talk about later, could easily have entered the office. No suicide note was found. He apparently was mixed up in some serious political shenanigans. Very big wheel in the Democratic Party and a person of considerable influence in Washington. Also mixed up in the corruption of the Bobby Baker scandal. Was also involved in matters related to another brewing called in corruption involving the $7 billion F-111 contract in Texas' General Dynamics Corporation. Both scandals, Bobby Baker as well as the F-111 scandal, threatened to ruin Lyndon I'm Going to Be King Johnson politically. The official line that Stockdale committed suicide because he was depressed about the murder of JFK seems a bit of a weak supposition. As one author noted, hard-headed businessman, and Stockdale was certainly hard-headed, don't kill themselves because a friend's been murdered, even if he is the President of the United States. Now, research established that on November 26, 1963, Stockdale flew to Washington and met with JFK's brother, Robert and Edward. When he got back, he told several of his friends the world was closing in. December 1, 1963, he talked to his attorney, William Freites, who summarized their conversation He said they started talking, didn't make much sense. He said something about those guys trying to get him, and then he talked about the assassination. And that was the day before he went through the window of his 13th floor office. Now, his daughter stated publicly her father knew he was being followed. He had told her mother that some people were out to get him, and that she herself had an attempt on her life several days after her father's funeral, and she believed the attempt on her life was a way to coerce her mother into remaining silent, which actually worked. Now, for those reasons, some researchers speculated that Stockdale figured out that an anti-Castro intelligence operation had been hijacked and turned against Kennedy instead, and for that reason, Stockdale had to be killed. Now, Grant Stockdale was a close friend of Kennedy. He was also a former ambassador to Ireland. JFK even visited Stockdale and Stockdale's home in Coral Gables, Florida. Stockdale was also friends with Senator George Smathers, also of Florida, who was another close friend of Kennedy. Stockdale even headed the Kennedy campaign in Florida. After JFK won the Democratic nomination for president, Stockdale was the Kennedy campaign finance chairman for 11 southern states. Now, according to researcher Adele Edison, at 10 o'clock in the morning on Monday, December 2nd, 1963, Grant Stockdale came to his office on the 13th floor of the Alfred I. DuPont building. His secretary, Laverne Weingartner, who usually opened the office, wasn't there but at a dentist office and wouldn't arrive at work until about 10:30. Stockdale went into a law office across the hall from his own and asked Ms. Mary Ruth Hauser how he could get a key to unlock his office door. She offered to call the building manager and to send somebody to open it up. She said he followed me into my office and stood there while I called down for a key. He was very calm. He didn't seem at all upset. Somehow the subject of the president's death came up, and he said he was in his office when his wife called to tell him the president had been shot. He said he got down on his knees and prayed. Well, Stockdale and Ms. Hauser were still talking when somebody came to unlock his door. She started to follow him across the hall, but just then her office phone started ringing, and she stopped to answer it. She said it couldn't have been 5 minutes later. There was a terrible thud, and I wondered if I'd have gone right in. I don't know. I guess it wouldn't have made any difference. The whole world just gone crazy. Well, all the people who saw and spoke to him on his way to work said he'd been in good spirits, waving and saying hello. Stop for a shoe shine. Spoke to the elevator operator and exchanged words with the parking garage attendant. Now, that doesn't sound like a suicidal individual. One newspaper report states Miss Stockdale had urged her husband to seek help for his depression after the assassination. But she called the doctor on Monday to inform him he was so much better. Furthermore, Stockdale's own daughter, Ann Stockdale, provided investigators with a lot of information concerning her father's murder. She said one thing she did know was that Kennedy asked Daddy to go to the Air Force Base south of Miami to see if, against Kennedy's orders, bombs were being loaded onto planes. And it was discovered bombs were being loaded onto planes. I believe one of the reasons Daddy was killed is because he knew the government was being run by the military complex. Now, the military complex didn't want the American people to realize and that they were calling the shots, and she said Daddy knew he was being followed, and he told Mother that they were going to get him, and that they did. Then there was an attempt on Ann Stockdale's life several days after the funeral. Now, the simple facts involving this particular death is he was an intimate friend of Kennedy, had a reputation as a tough businessman, known to be well-connected in Washington, privy to high-level information, capable of connecting the dots, was involved in two major scandals that were brewing that had seriously threatened the entire political career of Lyndon, I'm going to be King Johnson, didn't leave a suicide note or any indication he was facing the end, and he told friends and his attorney the day before he died that folks were trying to get him. In all likelihood, his death was related to the Kennedy assassination. Then we have Jim Cothey, died December 21st, 1964. And Bill Hunter, died April 23rd, 1964. They were both newspaper reporters. Colthy was killed by a karate chop to the neck. Hunter was shot by a policeman. The official verdict, Colthy was actually surprised a burglar and the burglar killed him. In the case of Hunter, it was an accidental shooting. Now, one of the things that brought the burglar, that the burglar took from Colthy was all of Colthy's notes on the Kennedy assassination for his planned book. In the case of Hunter, a policeman was reportedly playing around with a quick drawing of his weapon from its holster and pointed a loaded gun at Hunter. It went off and killed him. Now, Karen Kubtinit wasn't the only Kennedy witness to die of a broken neck, reporting that Colthy was killed by a karate chop to the neck as he was emerging from the shower to in his bathroom. Had a striking similarity to the death of Kupchinik. Now, Jim Colthy was a young reporter for the Dallas Times-Herald who was actively investigating the assassination of Kennedy. Reported he was in the process of writing a book about it. In an occurrence that continued repeating well beyond the odds of probability, his notes on the assassination for his book vanished. Now, robbery appeared to be the motive, although Colthy's parents believe he was killed for other reasons. Whoever ransacked his apartment, they pointed out, was careful to remove his notes for the book he was going to write in collaboration with two other journalists on the Kennedy assassination. Now, he was one of the few reporters who gained access to Ruby's apartment on the night of the same day that Ruby shot Oswald. Another reporter in Ruby's apartment that night was Bill Hunter. He was the one that was accidentally killed by the police officer. He was shot to death in a California police station. Death ruled to be accidental. Result of a police officer who was just horsing around, pointing a loaded gun at him and pulled the trigger. Now, you would think a police officer would know if his gun was loaded or not. Bill Hunter worked for the Long Beach Independent. Press-Telegram was also covering the assassination story. He went to Dallas to work the story, met up with Jim Colthy, an old friend that he'd worked with before. Wasn't known if the two discovered anything newsworthy in Ruby's Dallas apartment. Police already been there earlier that day. But it is, you have to admit, a bizarre coincidence. Both were reporters, both working on the assassination story, both examining the story of Jack Ruby shooting Oswald, both were in Ruby's apartment on the night of the same day he murdered Oswald, and both were murdered themselves. Now, Bill Hunter, as I said, was accidentally shot by a police officer in a California police station. The officer stated he had been horsing around playing quick draw with another officer when his gun inadvertently went off and killed Hunter. Both officers involved in the incident were given 3 years probation for the murder of the reporter. Well, now there's no question Ruby shot Oswald. I mean, it was on national TV. On November 24th, 1963, Bill Hunter and Jim Colthy interviewed George Senator. Tom Howard was there. Senator and Howard both visited Ruby in jail. And that evening, Senator arranged for Colthy, Hunter, and Howard to search Ruby's apartment. Now, it would seem something important had to have taken place in Ruby's apartment that evening because a number of strange events happened immediately afterwards. George Senator lied about the meeting ever taking place between the three. Colthy was karate chopped to death and his JFK notes vanished. Hunter was shot because a cop played around and pointed a loaded gun at him, which police know they're not supposed to do. And Tom Howard, the fourth and last person who was at Ruby's apartment that night, also died of a heart attack March 27th. 1965, at the age of 48. As one JFK researcher made the observation, too many who approached Jack Ruby's role in an inquisitive way, Kupchinik to his daughter Karen, Kilgallen, and the 11-24-63 guest of George Senator at Ruby's apartment met a soon and untimely death. That does raise a lot of interesting questions. Now, the next death in our little cavalcade of witnesses was Dorothy Kilgallen herself. She died November 8, 1965. She was a nationally syndicated columnist. Now, the cause of death was a high-level barbiturates combined with alcohol. Official verdict, suicide or accidental overdose. In actual fact, she had told friends she had obtained information regarding the Kennedy assassination and would bust this case wide open. And she vowed she would crack the case. She was the only reporter who got a private interview with Jack Ruby after he shot Oswald, and after that interview, told friends she was about to blow the JFK case sky high. She implied she was saving important information garnered from that interview and from her investigation, including a book she's working on, which she felt certain would be a blockbuster. It's going to be entitled Murder One. Now, she was aware of the untimely and suspicious death of reporters Bill Hunter and Jim Cothey and gave a backup copy of her JFK chapter to her close friend, Florence Pritchett Smith, another journalist. The death scene was obviously staged, and Dorothy's book notes vanished. Florence Pritchett Smith died the next day, and the backup copy of the notes that Kilgallen had given her were never found either. In both murder and content, her death, Pritchett Smith's death and Kilgallen's death make it clear there was staging. Whoever staged the crime scene in Kilgallen's home made a lot of mistakes. Now, Dorothy Kilgallen was a famous news reporter whose gossip column was read by millions of people on almost a daily basis. She was so famous, in fact, that she herself had become a Hollywood-type celebrity, appearing as a regular guest on the extremely popular TV show What's My Line? But what made her famous as far as the JFK assassination was far a different matter. She'd been trusted with highly confidential information by Jack Ruby, the man who was forever silenced, Kennedy's assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, alleged assassin. He was never proven. Kilgallen was, in fact, the only reporter allowed an exclusive private interview with Ruby in the Dallas jail. Apparently, Ruby requested it. And what took place during the interview is still unknown, due to Dorothy's quite premature death. But right after the interview took place, she promised she'd break the JFK case wide open. She said her new upcoming book would include information of a startling nature. Her information, apparently in reference to one of her upcoming columns that might have contained an important excerpt of the book, was specific. Her exact words to a friend were, "In five more days, I'm going to bust this case wide open." Well, that was a scenario immediately prior to her death. Now, she is found dead on the third floor of her five-story Manhattan apartment, just off Park Avenue. The medical examiner determined she died from acute ethanol and barbiturate intoxication, and it also noted circumstances undetermined. And she is linked to the JFK assassination. She openly attacked the cover-up and whitewash in her newspaper column. As I said, she's the only reporter who got a private interview with Jack Ruby after he murdered Oswald. She took a lot of notes, but she hadn't yet publicly said what was in them. She was apparently saving her information on the Kennedy assassination for her upcoming book, which she was sure would be a blockbuster. And she said it would blow the lid off the cover-up surrounding the assassination. Now, a version of that book that did not contain the JFK material was published posthumously. Now, it was known that she had extensive notes from her research as well as her interview with Ruby. And it was known to some of her friends she typically carried those notes around on her person because that's how important they were. It's rumored that her friend of many years, Fro Pritchard, had a torrid affair with Jack Kennedy both before and after he became president. Friends reported her romance lasted a number of years as one of only two such affairs of the president that were serious and long-lasting. The other was Mary Meyer, and she was murdered as well. Dorothy reportedly gave a backup copy of her notes from the Kennedy case to Pritchett. She died of leukemia, amazingly enough, the day after Dorothy Kilgallen died. And the JFK material was not located in her apartment. Now, if you look at Dorothy's comments and columns in their totality, she seems to have put together some very important points, which were highly pertinent to the Kennedy assassination. And she makes a number of very, very prescient points. There was a connection between Jack Ruby, J.D. Tippit, reportedly shot by Oswald, and a Texas oil millionaire, presumably H.L. Hunt, who many place as playing a role in organizing the assassination. Oswald's in too many places at too many times and by too many different descriptions to be the movements of just one person. Oswald had linkage to U.S. intelligence, and U.S. intelligence was nervous about it and covering something up about their relationship with him. Rena Oswald, herself suspected by the CIA of being a KGB asset, knew the truth about Oswald. And if she'd ever told it, it would have dramatically altered public perceptions of the assassination. At least according to Kilgallen in one of her columns regarding Marina. She said if people knew the whole story of her life when President Kennedy's alleged assassin, it would split open the front pages of newspapers all over the world. Something was rotten in Denmark. Dorothy Kilgallen knew what it was. She said even if Marina Oswalds explained why her late husband looked so different in an official police photo and a widely printed full-length picture featured on the cover of Life magazine, it would cause a sensation. The story isn't going to die as long as there's a real reporter alive, and there's a lot of them. She also knew that the real Oswald story was being suppressed. She also said it appears that Washington knows or suspects something about Lee Harvey Oswald that doesn't want Dallas and the rest of the world to know. Lee Harvey Oswald has passed on not only to his shuttly reward, but to the mysterious realm of classified persons whose whole story is known to only a few government agents. So you have to ask yourself, why is Oswald being kept in the shadows? As dim a figure as they can make him while the defense tries to rescue his killer with the help of information from the FBI. Who exactly was Lee Harvey Oswald? Now, Kilgallen also knew a lot of things about a lot of things. She also had strong links to the anti-Castro community. There was a rumor she was a CIA asset herself, which would make sense. They regularly fed her information for her columns that originated with that same anti-Castro camp that Oswald was immersed in. She expressed foreknowledge in her columns that Marilyn had been having an affair with Kennedy, then with Attorney General Robert Kennedy, and realized that it may have been linked to Marilyn's death. She also told friends whom she trusted she was very close to discovering who really killed Kennedy. She also explained to friends the reason why she hadn't gone public yet on her private interview with Ruby was that she was getting everything ready for her new book, which she was excited about and confident would be a bestseller. She was having a few financial problems at that point in time and saw the book as an answer to a lot of them. So the rumor was that she had a lot of information that she hadn't yet given out. She also said she knew she was being watched and followed. She gave a copy of her notes to a friend as a backup. She explained to close friends she had received death threats, and if certain individuals found out what information she possessed, it would get her killed. She had planned a trip to New Orleans that was very cloak and dagger and told friends she'd break the case within the next 5 days. But right before that trip that she had planned, she was found dead. She was found dead November 8th, shortly after coming back from Dallas, where she interviewed Jack Ruby. She revealed secret transcripts of Ruby's testimony in her column. She learned of a meeting 3 weeks before the assassination at Ruby's Carousel Club. That was the Dallas Underworld's merry-go-round where the Big D mobsters all got together. Present at that meeting, she said, were Ruby, Officer J.D. Tippit, Bernard Weissman, and a fourth party. It's a fact that when She came back to New York. She told friends she discovered that Ruby and Tippett had been friends. They'd been seen together in Ruby's Carousel Club at a meeting 2 weeks before the assassination. They'd been with Bernard Weissman, who had placed the JFK Wanted for Treason newspaper ad, the Dallas newspaper, November 22nd. Now, studying the Warren Commission report, she determined that the meeting had also been reported to Chief Justice Warren and that the identity of the fourth man that she hadn't been unable to get previously had been reported to Warren as a rich Texas oil man, as Earl Warren described him in the official transcript. She said she discovered something that was going to break the whole case wide open. Now, a lot of research has suggested that a suspicious individual named Ron Pataki, a young man who'd been very close friends with Dorothy, may have been involved in her death. Mr. Pataki had been accused of having links to the CIA and of attending assassination training. The implication was that his sudden friendship with Carol Gallo was insincere and actually is a mean to suicide her. Well, the official version is that Dorothy accidentally mixed too much booze with her barbiturates and that killed her. Well, if you look at it, I don't think that's true. Now, there's not nearly as much forensic information on Dorothy Dez as there should be for even a typical non-celebrity death, and what does exist is vague and self-contradictory. There was a lot of clear crime scene staging. Offenders who stage crime scenes usually make mistakes because they arrange the scene to resemble what they believe it should look like. As a result, inconsistencies of forensic findings in the overall big picture begin to appear. Now, even if you ignore the fact that a famous reporter working on the biggest story of her career is very unlikely to commit suicide or overdose, there's some extremely bizarre oddities in the death of Dorothy Kilgallen. Her body was found in a bed that friends and family knew she never slept in. And if you underestimate the gravity of that point, consider that Dorothy's hairdresser who discovered her body said, "I'll tell you, that bed in which she's found and how I found her, you're going to know she was murdered." She's found wearing what she ultimately been described as a peignoir or a bolero-type blouse over a nightgown, a thing which those who knew her best stated was certain she had never wear to go to bed. And if you don't even know what a peignoir is, it's the thing that Dorothy Kilgallen never ever wear to bed. It's a blue bed jacket in this case, but apparently something hard, not even imaginable, that Dorothy would wear. And that came from her hairdresser, and you can bet the hairdresser knows for sure. She was in bed with makeup and her false eyelashes on, which friends and family knew she'd never wear to go to sleep. There was a book placed on her bed, as though she'd been reading it before she passed out. But it was a book that she had told friends she'd already read. She had a set of reading glasses, used a set of reading glasses to read books, but there were no reading glasses anywhere near her. Now, laboratory testing on the glass found near her revealed traces of one barbiturate, but the autopsy revealed she was killed by a cocktail of small doses of three different barbiturates that formed a lethal combination with alcohol. It was made to look as if she'd simply taken some pills and gone to bed and quietly passed away. The air conditioner was left on, which she never did at night, because the home got unbearably cold. And it was cold when her hairdresser got there. A casual investigation, if you want to call it that, was done on her death. It was soft-pedal rather than the serious investigation you might suspect in the case of the death of somebody who has a national reputation. Now, we're going to talk more about the death of Dorothy Kilgallen in our next show, but for right now, we're running out of time. So until tomorrow at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.